Welcome to episode 3270 of the Survival Podcast. WTF is going on out there? This is really kind of a feedback show merged in with a current event show that continues on from where we were Monday. Because on Monday, guess what? I said I didn't know exactly what was going on, but there was a lot of BS behind the scenes going on. And a lot of that BS is beginning to reveal itself. We're going to talk about the fact that Kevin O'Leary of Shark Tank fame went on Fox News this morning, and some of you have seen the video already. He said, we don't need regional banks. We'll talk about that. Credit Suisse has crapped the bed. We'll talk about the impact of that being bigger than people realize. The bank contagion that doesn't exist. Remember? This weekend, or last weekend, right? It doesn't exist. There is no contagion. Don't worry about it. People should feel that their bank deposits are safe. That's what Janet Yellen said. Biden said something very similar. Did you ever catch what that didn't say? It didn't say that it was secure. You should feel that your bank deposits are secure. In other words, when it's in the bank, you should feel good about it. Doesn't mean that it's true. Should and could and would are all kinds of words that don't necessarily mean are. Regional banks have the least risk in many ways, even though they're not saying that right now, but everyone is effed in some other ways. I have an article for you. I won't read it, but I have a link in the show notes you can check out. And if you read past the headline, you realize that a lot of these extremely risky investments were like in, government, U.S. government issued treasury bonds. Wait a minute. Isn't that supposed to be the most secure thing out there that they were told to buy? Real quick, I want to mention I'm calling it an instant PBS documentary. Yeah, the people that they beg you to buy a $100 coffee cup and shopping bag once a year to stay on the air were able to produce a two-hour-long, incredibly in-depth documentary regarding the recent bank failure of Silicon Valley Bank in 48 hours. Like, maybe there was a plan or something. I think I mentioned this Monday, but I don't know that I really explained it. Then I got, before we kind of switch gears to the solution side, something not directly related to the banks, but actually directly related to the banks, because you can't trust no one, in the words of Chris Knight. And if you trust anybody today, especially from the media, industry, et cetera, the government, you're stupid. I'm going to show you a tank, a real T-72 Russian-made Ukrainian tank heading into battle, a dirt mound being used for propaganda. I'll have the video playing. There'll be no audio with it. I'll talk while it's running. If you know anything about combat tactics, you know how stupid this is, but it will work on people because people want to believe in heroes, even when those heroes are fighting dirt. Then we're going to talk about why. I know some of you are tired of hearing it, but I'm going to add a whole bunch of things in one, so don't get upset by the first word if you're still a holdout, boomers. Bitcoin, silver and gold, income systems that are independent of a job, tools, skills, productive systems, getting out of shitty areas. They're really your only play right now. I got a lot of people asking about protecting their money. And I think the problem is you think the money will be worth what it's worth if it doesn't go away from you. And that may not be the case. Or, people are worried about protecting their money. And don't you understand how interconnected everything is? And what do you think if this shit really implodes is going to happen to like your IRA, your 401k, and all those mutual funds and stocks and stuff you're holding? Yeah? Okay. So we'll talk about that. And that'll move us into some stuff that's more homesteading, permacultures, and things like that. Great way to store eggs safely for 12 to 18 months, maybe even more, with no refrigeration. And it's not like pickling them or something like that that changes the egg or the nature of the egg. Some of you know what I mean, lime. Anyway, some confusion I want to clear up about biochar. And a misspeak I made about a listener who I said he said something about blood pressure. It was blood sugar. I'll see if I can find that email while we're doing this and tell you about a martini recipe he gave as well. Increasing production on existing garden beds using fences, etc., by going vertical. This is a common question. I've already put a garden in. I want to grow some of the stuff like you're talking about, but I've got a couple little like 4x8s, or I think this guy's like 4x7s or something like that. And, you know, if you put something in there like a Tramboscino squash, which is really, really productive, my tactical assault squash next to my rifle and shotgun behind me there, that's a big plant. Takes a lot of space up. But if we go vertical, we don't give any garden space up. And that's the way to grow that sucker anyway, to get those nice, straight, long necks on them that you can do so much with. I have a question on cooking with pressure cookers. And the guy says, why would I make food with a pressure cooker? Doesn't have any, no flavor left in it at all. It's because pressure cookers generally overcook. And there's a simple way to fix that. Reduce the time in the pressure cooker. You're not pressure canning, you're cooking. It's one of those things that, based on what you're cooking, kind of the size, shape, you have to over time kind of dial in the time that gives you tender and done, but still has flavor. And using some other techniques in spite of this, or instead of a pressure cooker, might actually be a bit better than you using the pressure cooker. But I will tell you, I make pressure cooker ribs. I'll tell you what I do, and they come out fantastic. I don't cook them that long, 25, 30 minutes. That's it for baby backs. And lots of seasoning before and after the cook. And then, well, just wait for the segment. And then it is time to hatch the chickens. Said like this, time to hatch the chickens. Do you know what that's from? I'm not a very good impersonator. I'm not Rich Little. Yes, I'm old. The fact that I even know who Rich Little is. Some of you are Googling Rich Little right now to find out what the hell is this old man talking about. There was a commercial in the 80s that many of you will remember for Dunkin' Donuts. Like the old baker dude, time to make the donuts, right, in the morning. Time to hash the chickens. It is, and I'll tell you why, and it coincides with the item of the day. And since the item of the day is an incubator, and I have recommended a different incubator, which I just realized I never wrote up on the site, and I need to do because I own that one now as well. I'll talk about the difference between the two. And no, Faith, I don't mean Little Richard. He played music. Rich Little was an impersonator and a damn good one. 60s, 70s, and 80s. Folks will remember Rich Little well. All right, so let's start out. Before I jump into all of this, and boy, do we have a very bag of stuff today, don't we? Who else gives you this, by the way? Who else? Who in the podcast industry is going to break down the financial crisis for you, then tell you how to store eggs for 18 months without refrigeration, grow your own food, and hatch chickens? Who's going to do that? No one's going to do that. No one's going to. You want to start developing the skills in the second half of this show? Let me tell you what you want to get involved with. Paul Wheaton's freaking Kickstarter, Low Tech Labs, the best thing I've ever seen Paul do. There'll be a link in the audio notes from today for the podcast for those listening. If you're watching the video right now, there's a link right down there. There's all kinds of yummy links, but there's one for Paul. Go check it out. Back that Kickstarter. His goal is 11 grand. He went live Tuesday, and they're over 40 grand. That's because it's that awesome. You want to get the skill sets, check out Paul Wheaton, sponsor of today's podcast, with his new Kickstarter, Low Tech Labs. All right, so let's start off with something. I wanted to show you guys this, and I want to before I show it to you, I want to preface it with something that I've been saying, not recently, I have said it recently, but I've been saying it for a long, long, long time. And a quick reminder, if you're in the live stream, if you do not put all caps or question or comment that you want me to respond to, there's absolutely no way I'm going to see out of my one good eye while I'm by myself solo. But I've been saying for, God, over a year, CBDCs in the United States are going to not be what you think of as a CBDC. What they're going to do is allow the banks to create stable coins backed by reserves of the bank, which is the same shit they do now. It'll just be fully digital. And they'll say it's not a central bank digital currency because there's more than one bank doing it. course, there's one bank backing them all. This idea that we have as many banks as we do, if the Federal Reserve is behind all the banks, do we really have anything more than one central bank? Or we just have a lot of like branches and divisions, right? But just think about that. I said, one more time, instead of what we think of as a CBDC, the United States will have a different approach. U.S. banks will create stable coins that will be drug in under FDIC to protect them, and that this would be a de facto CBDC, but nobody would see it that way. It would also spread the United States dollar way more across the world, because anybody with a little box in their hand will be able to instantly start transacting in dollars and stave off inflation for a time, not permanently. I'm not going to explain the link. I'm just going to play the segment that I happened to catch this morning. My wife put on the TV before she left the house, picked grandkids up. Fox News was on. And I was minding my own business, posting shit on Noster, and I hear Kevin O'Leary from Shark Tank running his mouth, and I'm like, wait, did I just hear that? Rewound it, got up, and videoed the following with my cell phone. And it's not perfect audio, because me a video TV with a cell phone, it's not perfect. Here we go. Wait till you hear this.
And that will happen over and over and over again. That's the debate we're having in America today.
Because they changed the rules.
Kevin, how did this affect the small banks? Because we were told this morning that Bank of America was raking in $15 billion because so many panicked customers and small banks pulled their money out and went to some of the bigger banks.
Let me ask a very difficult question that we're going to have to face very shortly. Does America need regional banks anymore in an internet age when all the banking is done online? The only thing you care about is the stability of your accounts, and do they operate successfully, and are you able to transfer money and do payroll? The truth is, and this is tough love, I'm sorry, we don't need regional banks. We're going to move to a model that other countries have done very successfully, like Canada, like Australia, where you have four or five or six banks that are behemoths, highly regulated, still public, you can buy the stocks in them, but they work successfully. The most successful country in 08 was the Canadian banking system. There's no regional banks in Canada. There's just giant behemoths. We don't need regional banks in America either. This is really, look, I'm sorry. Don't shoot the messenger. This is a fact we have to debate. And we're not going to have regional banks, even if you guarantee the accounts, because people don't want to take the 1% chance if something goes wrong.
People don't want to take the 1% chance that something goes wrong. Didn't we just bail out like a bunch of assholes like Wells Fargo, which are among these giant banks that he thinks need to be around? Didn't they get caught opening fake accounts in people's names just a couple of years ago and get massive multi-billion dollar fines that they didn't really pay because they got the money from the same place that they stole the money from for all the years? My head hurts listening to this. And it's another one of those, damn, I didn't want to be proven right so hard so fast. What happens if we break down to four or five, six banks in the entire country? Right? That's all we have left. What does that do to freedom and choice? And I don't mean your choice in which line you sit in to deposit your paycheck. Because, yeah, he's right. Most people don't do that anymore. And if you're still doing that, stop it. Stop. If you're doing cash deposits from a cash business, I get standing in line. If you are taking your paycheck to the bank, what are you even doing? That has nothing to do with why we want regional banks. Let's put Jack was right, unfortunately, on the shelf for a second, and the crisis on the shelf for a second. Let's ask a question. Why would I want to do business with a regional bank? Well, because I might want a business loan. It's not a risky investment, right? Just a business loan. And I might want to go down and talk to a loan officer with some level of freaking autonomy that can analyze my business plan and say, yeah, Jack, you can have the money. Or that I have a track record of repaying with over and over and over again. And he just says, you know what, Jack, if you need the money, you can have the money up to a certain amount. If I'm doing revolving payroll loans and bridge loans where my finances have been on record with the bank forever, I might want that, right? Or I just might want to do business with somebody that's not freaking them. But what happens when you decide, you know, I don't like all these protesters? Because this never happened in a country like frickin' Canada, and you want to lock bank accounts up. Well, if you only have four or five or six banks, how easy is that to do? So that's all the problem, and that is the end game, because this crisis is a crisis they made. I'll show you in a bit that a lot of these risky investments they keep talking about were U.S. Treasury bonds. Yeah. The goal here is simple. The goal here is simple. To get rid of any remaining choice in how you financially conduct your life. That's what the goal is. The less banks, the less places that you have to keep an eye on. If you're the IRS, if you're the Department of Government Propaganda, if you're the disinformation czar, you know, if a housing czar's in charge of housing, is a disinformation czar in charge of disinformation? As in the source of it? Probably. This is disgusting. And I want to reiterate something a lot of you probably don't know because you're out of the crypto space, or even if you're in Bitcoin, you're not in the crypto space. Good for you. This guy was one of the biggest freaking shills for freaking Sam Bankman-Fried and FTX. This guy took buttloads of money from FTX and promoted FTX across his entire network of influence, which is massive, because he's on TV giving away money that's not really his as a venture capitalist, because VCs don't use their own money. They borrow money against their money, and they VC that. And if they lose, they have ways that they cover that so it never costs them anything. I'm just saying. They're not doing it because they're nice guys. Right? He wants us to be more like Australia and Canada. Did you pay attention to what Australia and Canada were like for the last 3 years? Australia, home of anti-vaxxer and COVID people that were diagnosed as having COVID. They had like internment camps for them. So did Canada. The trucker striking. He wants us to be more like that. And they did so great in the 08 collapse. They did better than anybody. You ask people that had their money in Australian bonds when the collapse came if they did better than anyone. Look at the value of the Australian and Canadian dollar during the 08 and after 08 crisis. Don't tell me they did better than anyone. Because their banks didn't fold didn't mean the value held. They're both turning into socialist hellholes. Let's be like that, says the so-called capitalist that's actually an oligarch and part of the system that he'll now defend to his death. Because when a man builds his home upon stupid, he will burn himself to death inside it before he will admit that he is wrong, as I said earlier this week. Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think that I really want to be like Canada or Australia, but we're heading there. Whether you believe that or not, if you think that the next, just the next freaking election is going to fix this or something, you ain't been paying attention. And let's move on. So remember, there's no contagion. You should feel that your money is safe in the bank. I should, but I don't. I'm sorry. And I'm not going to have audio of this. I'm just going to run this kind of video in the background here for you if you're watching the live feed. How Credit Suisse just unleashed a nightmare decision for the Fed Reserve and the European Central Bank. Let me explain what this really means, because this jackwad that they have here they're talking to doesn't really explain it very well at all. You got to come to a redneck hippie duck farmer to get an explanation for stuff like this. So the position that we're in is for, well, almost ever in the life of young adults, but for those of us that are older, the last 14-ish years, the Federal Reserve's had a policy. They buy up all bad debt. They keep interest rates near zero, and they just keep pumping money into the economy. And as bad as that was up to 2019, then they pumped like infinite amounts of money, trillions of dollars. We gave away trillions to overseas banks during the COVIDs. Okay? So this is a problem. Funny enough, if you print enough money, I know I'm just a redneck duck farmer here, but if you print enough money and you dump it in long enough, and if you send signals to the banks and investors that no matter what happens, we'll fix it for you, they do stupid shit and inflation goes through the roof. And there's a point where even if you're the Fed, even if you're doing this and doling out money to your buddies, you're like, okay, we want to keep our game going, and y'all are not using what we're giving you for anything meaningful, like, you know, infrastructure and shit that a country could actually use, like bridges that are falling down, train tracks that are derailing trains, all that. Like, you're not doing any of the shit that would actually be an investment, and you're screwing it up. So at some point, when people are about ready to run out in the streets, burn down the freaking Federal Reserve to the ground and start pulling bankers and Congress clowns out and hanging them from light posts because of the cost of eggs, we got to rein in inflation, and we'll fix it by making everybody mad by causing a recession, right? So they start quantitative tightening, the other side of quantitative easing, which just basically means they start dumping the shit assets that they have, and they stop buying them, and they stop printing money at the rate that they were, right? They actually start to contract the monetary supply, because when you dissolve a debt, you actually make money disintegrate. Can't get into how that works today, but that's what you're actually doing when you dissolve a debt. You actually cause the money to go away. And just think about the simplistic version of it. If loaning money in our fractional reserve system creates money, then what does paying the loan off do? It dissolves money. So your only solution to runaway inflation is contract the monetary supply and quantitatively tighten. Now you start doing that, and you also have to start moving interest rates up. When interest rates are high, stocks will die, right? That's how it works. When interest rates are low, stocks will grow. It's a very simple formula that historically has worked. So you start doing that, but the stocks keep going up because companies are still making shitloads of money. They're still taking risks because they're not worried one bit that if they fail, that it's actually going to hurt, right? And they always know they can pull the shit that Silicon Valley Bank did, and they can pay out bonuses, you know, a day before they collapse. And then all your executives who got paid in stock can dump all their stock right before it goes to shit because they know it's going to shit. Right. So you got to do it. You got to freaking rein in the inflation. But then when your own banks start failing, you have to do exactly what you said you weren't going to do. Pump more money in. You can lie about where it comes from, but the money comes from somewhere. We're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars here. Silicon Valley Bank was a billionaire's bank. It's risky stuff. It's the cryptocurrency. It's Dogecoin. It's Elon's fault. It's Trump's. No. You guys did it. Jay Powell, Janet Yellen, you guys did it. And you know you did it, and you knew what you were doing when you did it, and you thought you could control it, but you can't. So then you go, okay, we'll just shove all this money in this one bank. We'll shut these other two banks down, and we'll tell everybody, don't worry. But yeah, go ahead and move yourself into the bigger banks. This is a way that you ensure that the big banks have more insurance, because this is what no one will tell you. You are the bank's insurance. You understand that? You as a depositor are an insurance underwriter to your bank. Your deposits that they have on record are what balances the sheet against what they have out. That's their assets are you. Their receivables are you. That's your mortgage and your loans back to them. So the more a bank has of that, the more they can play around over here doing other shit. Yeah? You are the bank's insurance. So they're pushing the insurance into the larger banks by scaring you out of the regional banks. That's what they're doing. But this is the problem. To do this now, they thought they could do it. They thought they could control it. They could get control of the monster they really unleashed of inflation. But quantitative tightening and higher interest rates result in more bank failures. And when one bank fails, it puts pressure on all of them. This can blow up the entire economy, crash the stock market, wailing and gnashing of teeth, dogs and cats falling out of the sky and living together and having puppy kittens. The apocalypse, the end of the world, Ghostbuster style. Can't have that. So how do you fix it? Well, you expand the M3 and you lower interest rates, or at least stop raising them. But remember what you had to do to fix the inflation. You had to raise the interest rates and contract the M3 monetary supply. I did a meme earlier this week. So simple. So simple. You know the one with the superhero and he's got two buttons to push? And one said, raise rates, contract M3. And the other one said, lower rates, expand M3. And he's sweating. It said the Fed. That's where we are. Now, ask yourself. You can turn on MSNBC, CNN, Fox News. They bring all of these experts out. They got a PhD after their name. They've been investing and making lots of money for a long time. Can't explain it that simple to you. You know why? Because they know if they explain it that simple to you, they've given away the gig. The gig is up. And with Gregory Hines in History of the World Part 1, which they finally made Part 2 of, and the flower comes up, he goes, the jig is up and gone. That's what they would be doing. They would be raising the flower on the fan, right? The feather on the fan would come up, and you would know the truth that I just gave you. Can't have that. Can't have that, because that could cause a complete and total breakdown of society. Now, let me give you some translations of things like society. When they say society, what they mean is their system of controlling society. When they say our democracy, they mean their oligarchy. You have to start understanding what the words they say actually mean. They say the words, and the words are said to you like a bunch of freaking parrots. And I don't mean you guys watching this video, okay? I mean the average idiot that watches TV and listens to these talking heads that run around and start screaming, it's a threat to our democracy, it's a threat to our democracy. You might as well just add, bah, bah, threat to our democracy to it. They're freaking cockatoos, right? They're parrots. They repeat whatever they're told. And the other side's just as bad. You can go through over and over again. Everything's a catchphrase. Everything's something you can teach a freaking minor bird to say in a week. And if they get you saying it, and worse yet, get you believing it, then you stick to listening to them and doing what they tell you to do. And if they broke it down and made it simple, like I just did for you, well, you know what? Then you would have a problem on your hands, because people might actually demand that you fix the problems that you created, even if they know how much pain we might have to go through to get them fixed, because we know the longer we wait, the more it's going to hurt. And always it's going to hurt. Because let's go back to this. Remember how they said there is no contagion. And remember what I said on Monday? Remember what I said on Monday about a contagion and there is no contagion? I believe it was something to this effect. Somebody here was here on Monday. Please correct. Tell everybody I'm lying if I'm wrong. Okay. I said saying there was no contagion when you didn't know what was going to happen next was like saying we found a really bad computer virus capable of shutting down the entire internet, and it was on like 10 computers. And it had been there a long time, and it just activated out of nowhere, but we caught those 10 computers. We shut those 10 computers down, and you don't have to worry. It didn't infect any other computers. But we're not going to tell you where it came from, what it does, how it got there, who did it, or how long it was on those 10 computers. But don't worry about it. There's no contagion. Wouldn't even like my computer's probably effed. Well, that was Monday. The very next day, oh, gee, Credit Suisse is screwed. Now, you have to start connecting the dots or putting the puzzle pieces together, whatever does it for you here. Kevin Jackass O'Leary just came on Fox News and told you we need to be like Canada and Australia with nationalized banks. Heavily regulated, just a few of them. We don't need regional banks. We need to be like them, because if you have heavily regulated, basically nationalized, oversaw banks, and there's only a few of them, we'll be great. Okay. Credit Suisse is a nationalized Swiss bank. I'm so old, I remember that a Swiss bank account was the gold standard for the safety, privacy, and protection of your money. Anybody else remember that out there? Anybody else remember that out there? I do. I remember when, like, if you were an American, you were the one group of people who didn't have a Swiss bank account because it was too good for you. It's only for our rich people. Yeah. So now there's two national Swiss banks. Credit Suisse is one of them. It's about ready to go tits up and die, except the Swiss government will bank it, back it up with their Swiss francs, because they print money too. Yeah. So if that wasn't bad enough, right? Okay, so Credit Suisse, like I said, we know this is a problem, but there is no contagion. See, we were isolated here with SVB. This is all because of cryptocurrency and risky investments like U.S. Treasury bonds, which I agree are quite risky. And that's one thing. And Credit Suisse, that's its own thing. There's no contagion. So looks like I don't have the link for you on the European banks. And that's a problem, because I wanted to show that to you. You're going to have to You're going to have to trust me here. I'm going to read it for you from my other screen, which I can't bring on. And there is a link in the show notes for this. But this week, we had an instance where this contagion that doesn't exist began to spread through the European stock markets. And there was about six European banks, which are not in the contagion, that are better managed and well backed, and you don't have to worry about. And the investors in those banks started dumping the stock in those banks so fast that they did something that you probably should never do. But they do it. They halted trading. No contagion. Don't worry about it. Nothing to see here. It's fine. People should feel secure that their money in the banks is safe. And I'm going to tell you, you may not think that I agree with your cash being safe in the bank right now. You may be thinking I'm saying go get your money, put it in a mattress or a box. I'm not. I actually think odds are your money, as far as number of dollars and cents, will be relatively safe in the bank. What about the value? That's a different thing. I am much more concerned, and nobody's asking this question right now, what is this going to do to your investments? When you have a banking crisis and a liquidity crisis, what does that do to the value of stocks that are 100% bought into speculation, which is why they're priced where they are 2, 3, 5 years out from their current earnings? Could be a problem. Where's most of your wealth? Is most of your wealth in, you know, Summit Bank or Joe Blow Bank or Federal Credit Union XYZ? Is most of your money in there, or is most of your money in your 401k and your IRA? Where is most of your money? Are you looking at the right spot when you're worried about money? Most people, I'm not going to say all people, most people have a few thousand dollars-ish in savings accounts. Some people have a full 90-day reserve supply in the savings account, but they have that money there. And they have like their paycheck flow through their bank, and they pay their electric bill and their cable bill and their mortgage and all of that, and their car payment and all that shit. So at any given time, you have about 30 days worth of your income that's not invested elsewhere in the bank. And that's what you're worried about. But you have 20, 30 years of your invested savings in your retirement account. And because they effed you in the A, like I told you 15 years ago, and took away a dollar fund where at least you could hold dollars, even if the value, at least you could hold dollars. And they replaced it with a bond fund, which is actually a lot of the bonds are what's caused this shit to happen now. You have no safe haven inside that investment vehicle. You have to sit there and take it up the butt. Yeah. Proctology exam up to the elbow, no loop. And we're worried about the bank account. This is insured by FDIC for almost everybody with a bank account except the billionaires who now know they will be bailed out and have no incentive whatsoever to retract their risky behavior at all. And the big fish eat the little fish, and we won't see going from all these regional banks to no regional banks this year. But you'll see a lot of little banks just chomp, chomp, chomp. And what'll happen is they won't fail. They'll literally get eaten. They'll get squeezed. And then the boys will come in, right? The boys, you know, Bill Knuckles, right? Ronnie Legs, right? But they work for like Jamie Dimon. You know who Jamie Dimon is if you don't look it up, okay? They'll come in and go, hey, yo, looky, you got a problem, see? Your bank, it's under pressure. You wouldn't want us to tell people that your bank's under pressure, would you? Here's a bunch of monies. You take the monies, we buy your bank, you go away, you go off, and you have a good time. Bye-bye now. This is not an offer. This is what you're going to do. This is like when we told Breyer he's retiring from the Supreme Court. You understand. That's what's coming. They're going to start buying up a lot of these little banks. And this is not something that's hard to do, by the way, when you can print the money to buy the bank with, and you just take all those depositors and all their accounts due and you pull them into JP Morgan Chase. This is where they're going. This is what they're doing. And you got to think about what they did, what two totally different entities did. The European stock market said, hey, we got to protect the investors by not letting them sell their stock. We got to make them keep their stock in, like, you know, all these banks. So we'll stop trading temporarily. And then once everything settles down, we'll open trading up again. You know, we'll backstop it and then we'll open trading back up. So USDC, which is a stable coin that was heavily invested into Silicon Valley Bank, had over $2 billion in reserves. Now, I want to be clear when I talk about USDC here. I am not saying they did anything in particularly wrong. When you do a stable coin and you say it's backed, you're supposed to have a certain amount of cash back based on how much and other assets based on how much of the stable coin you've issued. They had billions of dollars in backing, as good as money in the bank, sitting in Silicon Valley Bank. Many of you don't know this. This weekend, you could have bought one USDC, it's supposed to say pegged at a value of $1 for 80 cents. I almost went and bought about $5,000 worth at that price because I knew I was going to make 20% on my money because I knew they were going to backstop this, and I just couldn't make myself do it. I just didn't have the stones to do it. I knew it, but I didn't not only not do it, I didn't say it because I wasn't 100% sure. Well, it's back pegged to a dollar right now. You could have bought as much of it as you, like, people were fire selling that shit because they weren't sure that they would get their money back. So if I had to take a loss of 20%, it's better than 100%. Well, as soon as they came out and said, we're going to fully back all the deposits at Silicon Valley Bank, boom, right back up. They basically went to one of these big banks and the big bank said, we'll cover it because when you get your money, we'll just take it. It's as good as money in our bank. So we're good. So Coinbase shut down the ability to trade, withdraw, move USDC over the weekend temporarily to backstop it. So Coinbase, a non-banking institution tied into the banking system, publicly traded company in the United States, by the way, shut down trading, and the European stock market shut down trading over the same actual issue once you see the two connected together. But there is no contagion. What kind of conspiracy theorist are you? Why don't you trust the experts? Why don't you believe the experts? Now, here's an interesting little article I'm going to put up on the screen for you right now, just to continue this line of thinking. So this is going to tell you supposedly how Silicon Valley Bank failed and why it probably won't happen to your bank, your little regional bank that Kevin O'Leary just said we don't need anymore. And the interesting thing on this one, I have set on my Brave browser here a search up here at the top for treasury bonds. It says one of three. So when I hit this, it's going to jump down and say, that's not to say they didn't have assets, but Silicon Valley Bank didn't have the cash available because it used money held in the bank to buy treasury bonds. With the increase in interest rates, treasury bond prices go down. So these aren't real numbers, but basically Silicon Valley Bank bought treasury bonds at $100, and then those bonds went down in value to $75. Wait a minute. Do you know what the primary reserve of your regional bank is? Treasury bonds. Do you know why the banks are so full of treasury bonds? Because during the COVID crisis, they pumped massive amounts of money into the banks, and then they said, be a good bank, go buy bonds. We'll give you the money at a really low interest rate. Now, the bonds pay shit for interest, but it's more than we gave you the money for. So you can't lose. It's free money. You buy our bonds, you prop up our Ponzi scheme, we prop up your Ponzi scheme, you get to skim a little off of it. That will technically increase your reserves, by the way, and you can loan more money out. We all win, and they all lose, like always. Then they turned around and jacked up the rates for loans, which made the value of these bonds less. So the ironclad reserve that these banks put in place at the behest of the government and the Federal Reserve are a big part of what failed. Also, mortgage-backed securities failed. You see that right here. Mortgage-backed securities also failed. Do you know why the banks had mortgage-backed securities? Do you think it's because Silicon Valley Bank was in the business of making lots of mortgages? No, they were a bank primarily for venture capitalists. They had mortgage-backed securities because they were also told to buy those. Remember I told you the Fed started to divest itself of all these assets that it had picked up, who do you think bought them? You think Bill Gates bought them? You think so? You think Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos bought them? You think? Even if they did, how would they do it? They would leverage bank debt. They're not going to use their own money for that. Who do you think bought these assets, these toxic assets, these depressed assets? Well, these guys did. And all these other banks did too. This is all the biggest incestuous game of grab ass that you've ever seen in your life. But no one will explain the very, do you see how simple this is? Do you understand how simple all this is? It's hard to understand how simple it is, and I'm going to explain why. For the same reason it's hard to even understand how a fractional reserve banking system works. And the reason it's so hard to understand how a fractional reserve banking system works, which is I loan you money I don't have, and your promise to repay me the money makes new money. That's actually a very simple sentence. I loan you money, you put up some form of collateral, but really what you're putting up is your promise to pay the money back. There is no money. It doesn't exist. You make a promise, you sign a piece of paper, I type some numbers into a computer, and the money, poof, comes out of thin air. You now have the money. I have the right to get the money back plus interest on money I gave you that I never had. Now, if you're sitting here and your brain is locking up because you've never heard me or somebody else talk about this before, you have to understand why. It's not locking up because it's complicated. It's so simple and it is so illogical that your brain is literally repelling it. Like a toad skin jacket repels water, or a frog togs jacket repels water, or a duck's back repels water. It won't go into your brain because you're actually smart. This is easy to understand if you study the system long enough that you accept it, or you're stupid. Stupid people understand this like, oh, okay. Right? They often don't see a problem with it. But smart people that have never been exposed to that before, their mind rejects it because it's too simple and too stupid. These smart people can't do something that's this stupid. There has to be something else to it. There isn't. There is nothing else to it. The entire crisis that's going on right now is incredibly simple to understand. Because you're smart, your mind is rejecting it. And they know that. So they can put a bunch of long words, bring guys out with letters after their name, talk a bunch of shit, make it partisan, make it part of the ass clown circus. That's my word for the election of people that are new to me. And then you're just like, I don't understand. And you give up and you just say, I need to protect my money. And you don't even know what it means. And you don't realize what's most at risk. What's most at risk is your investments. And what's most at risk is your house. Because if you go into a recession without capital reserves to pay your mortgage, if you lose your job or your source of income, then you lose your biggest asset, which is your home, which Robert Kiyosaki tells you is a liability. Of course, he owns hundreds of them that he bought with other people's money. So how much of a liability is it? What he actually means when he says it's a liability is the minute you can't pay for it, it becomes a liability. It shifts because you have a balance due owed against it. So right now, the biggest threat to the average middle-class American is their investments in their housing and losing their housing or having to downgrade the quality of their housing. Now, why haven't they told you that? Because then you might panic, you might get really pissed off, and you might actually start to change the way you do business. Can't have that, because when we say society, what do we really mean? Their control over society. That's what's being protected right now. The government is not seeing to solving the problems of the United States people. They're more concerned about foreign governments. They're more concerned about overall, though, their control. Their control over you, your way of life, what you eat, how you spend your money, where it goes, who you talk to, and how you think. And they're more worried about how your children think than how you think because they're thinking a generation ahead, wresting greater control across time to maintain control for their power structure. Again, this is simple. No one tells you this because no one wants to tell you this because it doesn't benefit them. Truth be told, it doesn't really directly benefit me to tell you this. I'm just kind of big on truth and understanding and educating people and helping them understand why I talk about all the other crazy shit we need. Nicole Saw says, holler dollars need to be a thing. Nicole, let go of the shit coins. I know I was part of it at one time too. Use Lightning. You already have it. just get everybody a wallet of Satoshi, start doing business in Satoshis, and you're done. Then you have holler dollars or Joe Bucks or whatever you want to have. Lightning Network, wallet of Satoshi, done. Start transacting business with each other off chain for all of the small purchases that you're talking about when you talk about regional currencies anyway. As for banking, we'll have FedEmints in time. We'll get to that. That's a little bit more down the road before we start to turn the corner. Real quick, I want to bring this up on the screen. So somebody sent me this on Monday morning. It's a documentary produced by PBS. It's almost 2 hours long. It goes deep in depth. And I will say a lot of the interviews and stuff are older interviews. But this was totally put together to explain the crisis we're in and the banking collapse of Silicon Valley Bank. In fact, this picture that's on the screen is about 5 seconds into this documentary. Again, the people who beg you to buy a coffee cup for $100 to stay on the air were able to produce an incredibly in-depth and I will say well-produced and full of truth and lies, just state of the truth thing, documentary in 48 hours from the time this shit hit until they put it out. Sure they did. Sure this wasn't sitting there ready to go. Sure this wasn't in production. Do you think that it, like, I know that your favorite YouTuber could slap together something this good in a day. I know they could. We know people that can do it. PBS, you think there's anybody with any efficiency working inside of PBS? Images, copyrights, royalty, all the shit that goes in when you make something like this in the corporate structure. Then you add the bureaucracy of PBS. PBS produced this in 48 hours. Oh, horse crap. Oh, horse crap they did. Come on, guys. This was all, like, everything you're seeing is part of a plan. Please understand that. On that note, this is something you have to see. And I think I have the volume muted here so I can just play this video. This is right where we're going to turn a corner. I can't do that full screen and get my screen back for some reason. So this is supposed to be today. I saw this posted by this jack wagon. What's his name? OSNT Technical. East of Slovensk, a Ukrainian T-72 tank from the 54th Mechanized Brigade advances on a Russian trench line under the cover of fog, engaging the Russian positions from near point-blank range. So heroic, so brave, with a great big blue and gold Ukrainian flag sticking up out of the turret, because that's what you do. Okay. I'm going to defend the concept of the flag being displayed just a tiny bit here. Then we're going to go and tear this apart, all right? They have T-72 tanks. So do the Russians. Might be good to know, like, don't shoot that one, okay? So maybe on that. Well, here's the thing, though. Here's this tank with a drone following it with beautiful, perfect footage. It's fighting a trench line of entrenched Russian soldiers at point blank range. Okay. It's by itself. Some of my folks out there were in the military. Some of you guys were freaking tank commanders. There's got to be one or two of you in a live feed right now. If you listen and don't watch and you're live, pull this up and look at this. Start telling these people what's wrong with this. No infantry support, no air support, no additional tanks, all by itself. Well-run path, never strays from it, drives straight down the tracks. This looks like this place here. I used to work for Lockheed Martin as a consultant many, 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 many years ago. And in Grand Prairie, Texas, they have this place where they had these, they were like APCs. But they were for the MLRS missile system, the multiple launch rocket system. And they had this place that they drove these things around out there. They didn't shoot nothing with them, but they drove them around. They tested them. They bring generals in and feed them booze and let them watch the things drive around and get orders and stuff. And I mean generals from our government, from all over the world, et cetera, to watch these things drive around. This is what this looks like. Like this place where it's driven 100,000 times back and forth. They don't go off the road. That way, you're fooling the enemy who would expect you to go off the road, and they don't know where to train their weapons on you. If you go watch this, because I can't blow it up and get my screen back at the same time here, but if you go watch the full screen, you'll notice a distinct lack of things like, oh, I don't know, rounds bouncing off the tank. You know, the Russian equivalent to our AT-4, I don't know what it is, but like, you know, the Russians actually have weapons to destroy tanks. Do you guys see what I'm saying here? Do you see what I'm saying here? They're having a war. They're having a battle with a dirt pile. Now, it looks to me when they show some of the aftermath of the tank engaging, like there was a trench line there. There's nobody in the trench. This isn't engaging the enemy at point blank range. This is propagandist bullshit. Now, the interesting thing is when I posted this, there's some people that came into the comments and defended Ukraine. They didn't say, you don't know, man, it's real. When they read what I wrote and they looked at it, they said, well, what would you do? Of course, one guy said, any country that doesn't engage in this kind of propaganda during a war isn't really trying to win the war. This is up there with the ghost of Kyiv at the beginning and the Miss Ukraine fighting the war. And she had the pretty gloves on and perfect hair. And at the beginning, where'd she go, by the way? Where's all the models from Ukraine that were out fighting the war? Now all we get is a picture of their butt in tight BDUs, but you don't see the person. It's probably a dude transitioning, or he's a dude with a well put together ass, and they didn't have the right size BDUs for him. Somebody took a picture and went, that looks like a chick's ass. Let's use this for propaganda. People look at chick's asses. But the fact that it's a scam shouldn't surprise you. If it wasn't a scam, that's what should surprise you. I didn't bring this up to make a case against U.S. backing Ukraine and trying to lead the United States into a hot war with Russia today, though that's a pretty good case to make. I brought it up just to reinforce that you're being lied to about everything all the time. Just like this incredibly complex situation, which normal people can't possibly understand. So we brought in Joe Jackoff, who is an expert in all things Joe Jackoff, to try to explain it to you today in a way that you can understand just a little bit, is a lie. Because you could explain it really easily, like I just did. So is everything else. Lockdowns were a lie. Jabs were a lie. Masks were a lie. Mascience is a lie. Almost everything they tell you is a lie, but much like that PBS documentary, and I actually recommend watching it, shitloads of truth in it. What these people do, that was a real tank. There wasn't a real enemy. If you had used video from a computer game, eventually people will begin to figure out that you used a video game, because that's happened, by the way. I've even been fooled by it. There was a video, I actually shared it long ago. It was supposed to be a bunch of civilians being killed by a U.S. helicopter, which has happened, I'll say. But in this case, it was actually a scene from a really realistic looking video game. But people figured out, like, I know that thing, right? So you use a real tank, you send it in, you make a big production out of it, you show it to everybody. It's the same with everything else. The guy that they brought in is supposedly an MIT professor that understands the economics of the situation deeply. He is. He's just talking in big words that you won't understand. And sometimes he's even telling you the truth, but he's doing it in such a convoluted way. And have you ever noticed that when they bring some of these talking heads in? Blah, 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 blah. They bring them in. And then all of a sudden, the host is like, well, we have to leave. Or they do this. We have breaking news right now. And the guy never comes back. He got too close to the truth. Somebody got in their earpiece and said, hey, shut this guy off. Or all of a sudden, like, his microphone crackles a little bit. Or we're having some audio problems. I'm working with the booth right now to get him back on. But for now, we're going to go over to you, Dan. Do you think that's what actually happened? Do you think this all isn't one big Hollywood pile of crap? Do you really? Okay. I know most of you came for blood and guts today. I gave it to you. How about we talk about some solutions? How about we talk about things you can do? How about we stop bitching? Because they're doing all this. What do we do about it? Here's what I have for this bullet point in the transition. I'm going to read it verbatim, what I wrote this morning when I set this up. Why Bitcoin, comma, silver and gold, comma, income systems, comma, tools, comma, skills, comma, productive systems, comma, quote, getting out of shitty areas, end quote, comma, et cetera, are the only real moves right now. Because you can't stop any of this shit. You can't vote it away. We can create parallel economies. We can't defeat their economy. We can't replace their economy. All we can do is build our own and do as much as we can in ours so we can do as little as possible in theirs. We're still going to use theirs. We're going to be part of this crazy, effed up crap, whether we want to be or not. They're going to continue to downgrade the intelligence of our children in schools. They're going to continue to abuse children and teach them that you might not really be a little boy, Johnny, until parents get pissed off enough not to go to school board meetings and get on a terrorist watch list with that little elf Merrick Garland who's still pissed off that he's not a Supreme Court justice. When enough parents say, no more, you shall not touch my child. That's the only way to stop this. Exiting their systems, creating parallel systems, walking away, and having a means by which you can walk away. That's it. You have to feed yourself, grow your own food. You have to house yourself, get into the least overhead of debt you can with your housing, and have your housing be somewhere that's productive versus consumptive. I've only taught this for 15 years. If you're in a shitty area, get out, get out, get out, get out. I can't say it anymore. I'm going to go hoarse from saying get out. Protect your money. Protect your life. Protect your children. Protect your investments. When I was saying earlier, where's the bulk of your money invested? One guy said Bitcoin. Good for you. You're going to be okay. Jim Cramer says everything is going to be just fine. I posted a screenshot of that yesterday on Noster, and I said, we are effed. And I said, actually, society's effed. We'll be fine, guys. That doesn't mean it'll be easy. That doesn't mean there won't be any bumps in a row between here and there. That doesn't mean they won't keep trying to shake out weak hands. Just remember, if you're in the Bitcoin game, every time your hand gets weak, my hand gets stronger. People like me are the ones buying from you when you sell in fear. You don't want Bitcoin? Okay, fine. I know some of you, blah, blah, blah. Jim Cramer, Hunter. Jim Cramer. Anyway, yeah, some of you guys, Bitcoin, I prefer silver and gold. The problem is most of the people say that you don't have that either. You don't have that either. So you want to do silver and gold as a financial reserve? I don't think it's as solid of a financial reserve. It's harder to move. It's easier to confiscate. When you get it to a certain value, it's very bulky as far as the silver side of things, which most of you would buy. But you better have, and you better have more than one of these. Income systems. What's an income system? An income system is something that the value of it can fluctuate. You can bring in more money this month than last month. You can have less customers this month or more customers next month. But nobody can just call you up and go, hey, Bill, you're fired. Anything like that is an income system. You got to have something like that. Tools. What do I mean when I say tools? It's a very multifaceted thing. A drill is a tool. A screwdriver is a tool. A wrench is a tool. But I would also say my next word, skills, becomes a tool as well. Being able to do things in some ways is a tool. Having a piece of land that has enough area to do more than one thing with is in some ways a tool. Skills are invaluable, except they go away with your death or they go away with your injury. But if the skill set is something that can be transferred to others, in other words, even if I was injured, I could direct somebody what to do, then they still have tremendous value. Productive systems. A productive system is an income system that produces something other than money. Productive system is an income system that produces something other than money. A productive system is an income system that produces something other than money. Nicole Soss has sheep. Sheep make new sheep. It's an income system that produces something other than money. The baby sheep can become a lamb for the slaughter, and it can be sold to somebody at a profit and be converted into money. But until then, it hasn't produced money, and hence, it's not taxed. I can raise as many lambs as I want. I can eat all the lambs. I don't pay any tax. I can give you the lamb as a gift, and you can give me a gift, and it's not barter because we just decided it wasn't in our little heads, and it's not taxed. A garden is a productive system that's an income system that produces food instead of money. I can grow as much food as I want, and I can eat it. If I sell it, if it's on the books anyway, I got to pay tax on it, but I can lose a lot of money on a farm. It's not real money. See, it's a productive system that doesn't use money, but it leverages money. It takes capital that would otherwise not be seen as a loss and transforms it into a loss, like all businesses, except until I convert it into money, it's just producing a thing versus money. That's a productive system. A place that grows trees is a productive system that produces something of value because a tree is valuable, but it's producing something other than money. The business that sells the tree to the neighbor, that is a business system. That's an income system. And when you start realizing, geez, the way to make this Bitcoin stuff, the silver and gold stuff, the income system, the tools and the skills and the productive systems really sing is to start creating interconnections and not a linear connection, which is the way society thinks, but a webbed connection, which is the way permaculture thinks. That's the way to stability and rejuvenation, and that's regenerative, where things actually get stronger every year. Regenerative doesn't just have to be used before the word agriculture. It can be used in your own life. If your life is better every year, then by very nature of the term regenerative, you have a regenerative life. If it's worse every year, then you have what? An unsustainable life. If it's the same, that means struggling to barely get by. We call that sustainable. Where do you want to be? Where do you want to be in 5 years, in 10 years? Have you accepted yet that society over the next 20 years is going completely to shit? Has that dawned on you yet? Has it completely reined in your head yet? Well, if that's the case, then what do you have to do to not participate? You can't just say, I'm not going to comply. I'm not going to participate. You actually have to be able to mean it when you say it. I used to use a word a lot early in the show. I would say, at this point in my life, I'm unemployable. And I'd have people email me who had jobs and say they were unemployable too. And I'm like, no, you're not. You still have a job. Well, I need it for now, so you're employable. You can't just say it. You actually have to create the system by which you become unemployable. My wife is unemployable for a totally different reason, because we don't need anything. When we first moved back here from Arkansas, she talked to some of her friends, and most of her friends she actually worked with. That's how she knew them. And as soon as they heard she was back, they begged her to come back to work as a nurse. And I said, hun, you wouldn't last a week. Do you remember you used to come home and you used to bitch about your boss and the one employee there that didn't do any work and everybody had it, like all the bullshit? She goes, yeah. I said, how long would you take that right now, knowing you don't need your income? She said, never mind. And it wasn't me telling her, don't go work. If you want, my wife can do it. Trust me. My wife does what the hell she wants to do. But what she wants to do now is spend her days with her grandchildren, homeschooling them and being grandma. And she gets to do that. She's unemployable. You can't throw money at her and make her go back to work. If you want to be ungovernable, which is what we're really talking about, then you have to build the systems that enable that. Let's talk about a few things. That you like, we had a great conversation yesterday with Andy McCann, and he's like, I did a garden, didn't work for me, I don't do a garden no more. That's okay. But do something. And here's some things that I want to talk about. These are questions that came in, or some information that came in. My wife actually got this from one of our customers. I've heard about this before. I've never really looked into it much. I have a video in the audio notes for you. You can watch, about 5 minutes long, tells you exactly how to do this. But did you know you can store eggs for year and a half, almost 2 years, with very cheap stuff, and not pickle them or, you know, put them in salt and turn them into some kind of weird 100-year century egg from China that smells rotten? Like, nothing really hard. Like a 10-year-old kid could listen to the instructions and do this perfectly safe. It's called glass water eggs or lime water eggs. And I'm going to give you the short version, but I encourage you to watch the video to make sure you understand what I'm saying and don't do something wrong. You take hydrated food grade lime, and I believe it's 1 gram per 1 quart of water. This has been done since the 1800s. It's probably before that, but like on record since the 1800s. So if you're doing 5 quarts of water in a 3 gallon bucket, which seems to be about right for 80 eggs, you do 5 grams of hydrated lime to 5 quarts of water. I think it's grams. It could be ounces. I don't remember. Go watch the video that's in the audio notes. And you mix that, and it mixes really easily. And then you put your eggs in the water and put a top on the bucket. They recommend a 3 gallon bucket. It's a lot easier to move, and it's really best practice since you probably won't have 80 eggs in one day, or you might, right? But you'll probably put them in over time that when you start pulling them out, you reach down and pull your eggs out of the bottom first. And a 3 gallon bucket, that's a lot easier to do than a big old 5 gallon bucket, which is a lot harder to move. Some people do it in big mason jars, like half gallon mason jars or whatever. You do whatever you want. Same formula though. 1 quart water, 1 gram hydrated lime. Weigh it. Don't measure it by volume. The key, the eggs you put in there, you cannot wash them. They need to be fresh and they need to be clean. I can't wash them and they need to be clean. You use your eye holes, right? Your skull holes, those little eyes in them. Most of you have 2 good eyes. I got 1. If I can do it, you can do it. You look at the egg and go, this egg is clean. It goes in the glass water. This egg has poop on it. I will wash this egg and use it fresh. And what you do is you store enough eggs in the lime water to get through your molt and your darth. So your molt, you'll have production go down. And your winter, you'll also have production go down. So that way you have enough eggs. You don't have to take up freezer space. You don't have to cook them and dehydrate them. You don't have to do any of that shit. And if you're making a cake and you need 2 eggs, you take 2 eggs out, you crack them, you make a cake. If you want over easy eggs, you make over easy eggs. If you want scrambled eggs, you make scrambled eggs. You want them fried hard, you want them poached, you want them boiled, you want them soft yolks, however you want. You want to throw them in your pot, throw your sous vide circulator in there, set the temperature that makes the perfect soft yolk for you, you do that. All you do is wash the lime off of them before you cook them. Now, I've heard about this. And it was always like, I don't really need this. I have my own birds. But I thought about it. I do have my Lowells in production. And this would also be a way, and I might do this year, that we could put away our eggs that we save to cook for everybody in the fall workshop, and then everybody could experience them. And what actually happens is the lime basically completely hardens and seals in the shell. And then just kept at room temperature, the egg keeps perfectly well. And here's the thing, when people are like, how do I know my egg is good to eat? When you crack a bad egg, you know it almost instantly. It's one of nature's perfect foods. If it's begun to develop to the point where it's unappetizing, you'll notice that. If it's gone bad, you'll know. Anybody's ever cracked a bad egg, you know what it looks like. And most people that keep chickens or ducks. You've cracked an egg. It's not quite bad yet, but you're going to not eat it anyway. And you know what I mean. The whites begin to get cloudy, et cetera. And I watched this video, and I watched this girl crack an egg that was a year old, and it was clear, big, beautiful yolk, looked perfect. So I think this might be the single best way to preserve a high-protein, high-fat, high-nutritive value food. And the lady that did this said she bought a 5-pound bag of hydrated lime, or 50-pound bag of hydrated lime. If you're using a gram to the quart, or even an ounce to the quart, whatever it was, I think you're good from now till the end of the apocalypse. If your hydrated lime on a 50-pound bag runs out before the problem is over, you have other problems. So I wanted to make you aware of that. And I did some deep dive into it today and yesterday to make sure this really is safe. It has the Jack Spirico stamp of approval, hydrated lime, water glass eggs. Definitely should check into it. Next, on biochar, there's a few things that I really think people asking these questions didn't watch the 2+ hour podcast video, which was really a free seminar that I did on biochar. So I've had a lot of people asking, why can't I just use charcoal? Because it's not biochar. Because when you make charcoal, especially briquettes, there's binders and things in there that are not what you're looking for. If you use lump charcoal, they're made in what's called a Missouri kiln. It is not processed the same way at the same temperatures and as fast. And there's impurities in there. And that's why if you get some lump charcoal, it's great for cooking with. Don't get me wrong. But if you get it all over your hands and you try to wash your hands with just water, you can't get the black skank off your hands because there's oils and tars and things that plug up the holes, which is what makes biochar so great. So it just isn't the same. The other one is I've had several people ask me, you know, I have a solo stove or something. Can I use the stuff out of it? But it's white. It's because it's ash. It's actually a decent soil amendment if you have acidic soils because it's basically lime, and it will move the acidity more toward the alkaline. So if you have over-alkali soils, then ash is a good soil amendment. It's also temporary. It doesn't last. It's like season by season. You have to figure out how much you need. But it's not charcoal. Charcoal is black. All biochar is charcoal. Not all charcoal is biochar. Just like, you know, all anarchists are libertarians, but not all libertarians are anarchists. It's the same but different. So that's something on that. Now, the other thing was, and I'm going to see if I can find Dan's email here about biochar. Let me see. Or was it Dan or was it Christopher? Pretty sure it was Dan. Yeah, it was Dan. So I said that I had somebody that wrote in and said that they actually saw an immediate reduction in their blood pressure when they consumed biochar. I was wrong. It was one of those things where you read out of the side of your eye while you're working and you are doing 20 things. And I said, don't take this as verbatim. I'm not sure when I said it. I think that was Monday I might have said that. Here's what Dan Ashley said. I gave Dan's one of our egg customers, and I gave him a quart of biochar because he keeps worms and wanted it for feeding to his worms and stuff like that when he bought his last few dozen eggs from us. He said, thank you. Couple takeaways. It does taste like nothing and has the effect of lowering my blood sugar noticeably, nearly immediately. It would be interesting to see if it binds with glucose while in an acidic solution like blood. It would also be of help to someone with abnormally high blood. Would it also be helpful to somebody with abnormally high blood glucose level? And I don't know. I don't know. I will tell you that it's not binding with glucose in the bloodstream because it doesn't go in your bloodstream. It stays in your digestive tract. But what it may be doing is binding with glucose in the digestive system. So if your body's actively drawing from your digestive system, then when you cut off some of the glucose and bind up through adsorption, not absorption, then that would do it. Now, same thing I said when I thought I was talking about blood pressure here. Even if this was true for Dan, it doesn't mean it's a thing. There could be 100 things that cause it to happen. Or it could be unique to, like, this is something that would need greater research, but it's interesting to know. But then he says, a recipe for a martini. I found this interesting. A large pinch of ground biochar, aka food safe charcoal in a shaker tin, Bombay sapphire, dry vermouth, olive juice, shake and strain. It mellowed out the sapphire quite a bit and left the drink dark and cloudy. Great improvement. Yeah, I don't know about all that, but it's interesting. It's interesting. One thing I want to say about biochar. When you make biochar, it is safe to consume. Okay? It is. Period. What you do with it after you made it may change that. So one way we can add nitrogen to our biochar is urine. Don't use that when you eat it. And you might be like, oh, I wouldn't do that. But maybe some other things. So compost teas. Where's the biochar? Is it in a bucket open in your garage and it's been there for a month? I don't know that I would eat that. But if you watch Bob Wells, the whole workshop that I posted on biochar, he's like makes biochar, they quench the biochar, pulls it right out of the bucket and takes a bite out of it right in front of the students. Also, oh my God, it's as sanitized as it could get at that point. And it is weird. It doesn't have a flavor at all. You would think that it has a, like a barbecue flavor or something like that. It's very inert. We're feeding it to our dogs and our birds right now. I bring in a jar at a time for Dorothy. Every dog gets one tablespoon of biochar in his food every day. And I would say that the overall physical appearance of the dogs has seemed to improve since we've done that. And they stink a little bit less when they crack one off. Yeah, so that's an upside as well. Plus, they're making deposits all over the property, as are the birds. So that's just a little add-on on that. Now, I got an email today from a guy. He has two garden beds. They're like 7 by 4 foot, relatively small backyard. I think it was 0.2 acres or something, which is actually a pretty good size yard. And he wants to start increasing art by Lee Murphy. I'm going to go ahead and cover this one right now because this is a good question. And before we move on to the next one, wouldn't that be pretty much the same as activated charcoal you buy at the pharmacy? And I would actually say, if you want to start consuming charcoal, the activated charcoal, which is basically a very purified biochar, it would probably be better to use that than to use what you're making for yourself. I would suggest that, and most people that are in the biochar world do, and they probably do that just because we live in a very litigious society and you have no idea what the person's actually making. But activated charcoal is like a super premium biochar that's quenched pure with steam so that the pores in it are absolutely clear. So it's much more powerful and you would probably use less. And that's what they use if you get like food poisoning or some sort of poison you ingest and you go to the ER, they check your vital signs and then they pump a slurry of charcoal down into your stomach. And then usually it comes back up, but it absorbs the toxins. But it only works in what's in your digestive tract. Once it's in your blood, that's a different problem, just to be clear on that. But yeah, activated charcoal is the way to go. And by the way, specifically not in there's some of this in the United States, but in Europe and Asia, there are tons of products that for consumption by humans and things like toothpaste as well that have activated charcoal in them. This is not something foreign or crazy. Right. This is something well known throughout the history of mankind. Again, the oldest medicine used by humans in known history is charcoal. And animals in nature will go to where burns have happened once the burn stopped, obviously, and they'll actually consume charcoal of their own free will just from forest fires and stuff like that because they know it's of benefit to them. All right. Next up, back to the garden bed thing. So this guy's like, I got some 4x7 beds, small backyard. I want to grow more stuff. I see you growing like these snake beans and these Trumbuscino tactical assault squashes like this guy right here. And I want to grow that stuff, but I only have so much space. And like, if I plant my, one of those giant squashes in my bed, the whole bed is just going to be covered. That might not necessarily be bad if you did it because your taller plants, like let's say peppers would grow up. But those squash vines are so aggressive, they might kind of eat the pepper plants. And you're right. It's a big plant to put into a relatively small garden bed. But if you look at all the pictures of my gardens, you'll notice that there's a lot of vertical space. So my primary gardens, and I think I have a recent picture of this that I can pull up for you guys that are in the live chat while we're doing it. But my primary garden beds are made up of four gardens that are actually at right angles around my pond. And this will make a lot more sense, at least for those that are here, if I find this picture. And I think I can find it here. And just there it is right there. So let me bring that up for you. So there's four beds, and the beds are 8 foot long in two dimensions in the front and then 12 foot long in the back, and they form perfect right angles. And the back beds that you can see there, they actually have 4x4s, or they're actually landscape timbers because they're cheaper, sticking up out of them, and they have cattle panels. So that's a 12 foot long on each dimension. So there's 24 foot in those two beds on the back side of vertical space. And then in between the beds, there's a cattle panel that forms an arch, right? There's a cattle panel that forms an arch like this from one to the next. And all there's four gaps because there's four beds. And everyone has an arch. I grow my cucumbers, my beans, my tomatoes, my squash, my gourds. The squash, the snake bean is actually a gourd. I grow anything that's a vining plant on those. You might wonder why I don't have that same vertical space on the front side. that's south. So my sun comes in from that gape in the trees. That's my food forest on the other side of that. So if I were to put that in, I would overshade that part of the garden. Otherwise, I would. And I probably could get away with it in my climate. And I might even add it to the one bed that's on, as you're looking at the screen, your left corner forward, right? And I have other beds, and I've always used vertical space. And there's a lot of ways to do vertical space. You can use electrical conduit. You can use, you know, you can just build towers out of wood. You can, I've seen people build towers for beans, basically like a teepee shape, just using bamboo or what have you. Or you can grow vertical space. Now, growing the vertical space doesn't work great in general for big, heavy plants like Trombonzino squash or snake bean or cucumber. But beans, you grow sunflowers, big, giant, pretty sunflowers, plant four or five beans around them. Okra, plant a pole bean. Like, let your okra get half grown and plant a couple pole beans underneath it. They'll love it. They'll work together. The bean will give off some nitrogen through nitrogen fixation for the okra. The okra will provide the bean some shade in the heat of the day. The okra loves heat. It'll provide a trellis. So start growing vertically. The other thing is, you guys that have these you know, suburban backyards, I don't know about the whole country, but where I'm from in Texas, almost all the subdivisions have fencing, and almost all the fencing is 6-foot wooden privacy fence. So you get something like cattle panel, and like the 8-foot cattle panels, or you take a 16-footer and cut it in half, and what do you get? 2 8-footers. And you put it at a slight angle so that it touches the top of the fence at 8 foot, and it's 6 foot. So you step out about 3 foot, and you'll end up with kind of like almost a perfect, like straight fence, and then like a perfect, like, you know, what is it, like an 80-degree angle? And then you put a bed right out where the cattle panels hit the ground, just a little narrow bed that can be in ground as long as you don't have dogs that are going to dig it up or something like that. And you plant vertical plantings there, and maybe one row of conventional plantings. You have the entire circumference of your fence to work with and figure out where it is. Now, you've got shade, the neighbor's house, microclimates, figure out where the best opportunities are. A lot of times people have like the side of the house. They have these kind of narrow lots, but good solar exposure. And if you've got early sun, late shade in the southern climates, that's the Goldilocks zone. And you can put things that allow you to grow up the wall of your house, up the wall of your fence, both, even arches over it. That is a nice, cool place to be. You know, how cool would it be? You put a little deck over in a spot like that. You use some cattle panel arches over it, right? You put a couple little chairs out there. You sit out in the evening in the shade, right? And if you go out in the morning to have your coffee there, you're shaded by your plants in the top side of the summer. And those giant squashes or cucumbers are just up over your head. You can do it perennials too, grapevines, hops, if you're a brewer. Like, growing vertical is probably one of the best space multipliers there is. If you think about that picture I showed you, those arches are 16 foot. I give up about 1.5 feet on both sides to attach to the garden beds. So 3 foot. So I've got 13 feet of space. That big giant ass bed is only 12 feet long in the back. I've got more linear space for those vines in that one arch than the entire length of the bed. That's why hugelkultur is so productive as well. When you make big hugels, not the little bitty ones that people call hugel on YouTube, Sepp Holzer, you've got a meter and a half high, 70-degree angle bed, and it's about 9 feet of width at the top, but it goes up, what is it, 4 foot? A meter and a half? No, it's what, 5 foot? Meter and a half is 3 foot and 1.5 feet. 4.5 foot. So 4.5 foot by 4.5 foot, right? 9 feet. It's the same as the space this way, but you've got all of the vertical working for you on both sides with two microclimates, because both sides of the mound. You could do that without necessarily building a mound. Vertical, 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 vertical. And like vertical and then horizontal with vertical. So once you get up, then you can go out above things and then train vines along them. Just really, really simple. And you know what works great to do that with? When you have a vine and you're attaching it to something where it's actually going to hang from. Let's say you had a vertical, and then you had like you just went and cut down a 10-foot sapling, and you just roped it between two places. You got a 10-foot length to span, and there's nothing there. It's wide open. You can walk under it. If you're hanging a vine off of that, you want something that's wide and soft. So what we used to use a lot for plant ties when I was a kid is like old T-shirts and stuff like that. You tear, you cut a little slit, and you just tear them, and you want them to be about an inch wide. And then you tie first to the thing that's going to do the weight bearing, and then you tie a second knot to hold your vine up, and you leave a space in there so if that vine expands, it's got room to expand. You know what's great for that? Velcro zip ties. Like the Velcro ties that I recommend, you can find them at T-Spaz, like for, you know, wire management. And that way you can wrap something up and then take it back off and add another wire or redo things without cutting them off like a nylon zip tie. They work great for that. Very strong. If you need a longer one, you put two of them together. Really, really simple. And then every year you just take them down and put them away. You can reuse them for about 4 or 5 seasons before they start to really kind of be tired of being out in the sun. Very, very simple. EcoMouse says, 4X cattle panels attached to 2 stacks of 2 can provide protection frame around a 2,500-gallon tank when creating the storage area. Okay, I think you're probably talking to somebody else, but that's – so you've done that. Why not grow something on it, right? Use every bit of vertical space you have before you say you need more space. And that includes just even putting in more garden beds. We're going to have a question on that in the polls from this week on Monday, by the way, about expanding garden size that you have and what have you. All right. So next thing, I had a question. Cooking's an incredible skill set. It saves so much money to be a great cook over relying on going out to eat all the time and stuff like that. The question was basically, why does my food taste like nothing when I get it out of the pressure cooker? And here's what to understand. When you pressure cook food, you inevitably overcook food. And in our society, we're so afraid of everything, you know, not being done, that we tend to cook things for an hour that would be fine done in maybe 20 minutes. So depending on what you're cooking, depending on how tough it starts out, how tender you want it to become, because generally when we're pressure cooking, we're trying to cook faster and make something tough tender. If the thing you're eating is not something that will be tough if you cook it quickly in the oven or on a stovetop or on a grill, don't pressure cook it. Don't pressure cooking, not pressure canning, pressure cooking. When we're looking at pressure cooking meat, we're looking to make something that would take a long time fast. That's it. That's all we get out of it. So don't do it unless that's what you're going to get out of it. What you then have to do is figure out for this thing, what is the minimum amount of time to get what I'm looking for out of it? So when I do baby back ribs, I do them 25 minutes for 2 racks. And to fit them in, I use the electric pressure cooker. The one I recommend by is Nesco, and it's like 20 names now, but Carry, Nesco, etc. The one you can pressure can in. 25 minutes, 2 racks of baby backs cut in half, so 4 pieces. They fit in there kind of standing up. I give them a real good rub. And it's, you know, you say, well, Jack, what's your recipe for your barbecue rub, man? Depends on what I want that day. But a lot of times I use coffee. The cold sauce is here. Use some hollow roast coffee ground up. Coffee, like some sugar in a rub like this. But I use, oh, my God, erythritol, Lakanto brown sugar. Some of that salt, pepper, garlic, onion, a little bit of cumin, a little bit of paprika, maybe some chili powder. That might be what I do today. And I might do something totally different tomorrow, just what you like. But a good heavy rub of this stuff. Put them in there, cycle them. When the cycle's done, you vent it, however that works. If you're using one that you just lock together and put on a stovetop, you can open those almost instantly. You know what you do? You run them under cold water. If you watch cooking shows like Big Bobby Flay and stuff like that, you see chefs do it all the time because they have 45 minutes to cook in, right? So you run them under cold water, then you can open them. If you're doing the electric one, you got to wait for the thing to drop. And so get them out of there. This is the thing with things like ribs anyway. Set them on a cutting board. Leave them alone. Don't touch them. Let them come down to room temperature. They'll firm up a bit. Then give them a little baste or sauce or whatever. Throw them on a grill. Throw them on a stovetop. Warm them. Don't make them. They don't need to be cooked. Warm them. And you can make – is when I make ribs that way, are they as good as when I put them out on the smoker and I take 4 hours to make them? No. Are they good? Yeah, they're freaking good. That's the number one thing I make. We also make chicken in the pressure cooker, but not for us. We make it for the dogs. We buy leg quarters for $5 for 10 pounds. We throw them in the pressure cooker, pressure cook the crap out of them, pull all the meat, cartilage, everything off of them, save the bones. And once we've done enough batches that we can make a full batch of bones, we throw them back, the bones in a pressure cooker for 90 minutes. For bone stock? Yeah, for the dogs. But the bones get so soft, then we feed the bones, the marrow, all of it goes to the dogs with the dog's food. And we're feeding our dogs right now pretty much a carnivore diet with cheap chicken quarters. And I tell you what, it costs less than good dog food. We also buy the really cheap frozen uncooked hamburgers at Costco for the dogs. And so the dog will get like a certain amount, depending on the dog's weight, of the chicken and the bones and the cartilage. And then they'll get maybe a half of a burger patty for some diversity there. And I'm trying to add things like hearts and liver and stuff like that, mainly chicken because it's cheap. And they get like one piece of that so that they get a more varied diet. And our dogs are drastically improved. You guys that have been here and seen Charlie's getting older, he looks like he did 4 years ago now. And Lucy, fat Lucy, who was starting to like look like a tick, she's thinned down some, but she's running. She's jumping. It's pretty cool what's happened just by changing what they're eating. Now, how awesome is that, right? So, yeah, I told you we change. Like I said, who gives you this? What podcaster gives you this, guys? I don't mean to toot my own horn, but you tell me the podcast that can give you this, right? We start out with a bank meltdown and we get here. The other thing is, though, a lot of things that people pressure cook, I don't think you need to pressure cook. I think you would be better off slow cooking, slow roasting, or braising them. And all of those things are pretty much as easy as long as you have the time. So I'm not going to make a chuck roast or a pot roast and a pressure cooker. I might can chuck roast or pot roast that I got a deal on cubed up in a pressure cooker because I want to preserve it. But if I have a really nice pot roast, it's either going in the crock pot. I actually just pulled one out of the freezer because my wife loves pot roast, and I'll put that in a Dutch oven and stick that in the oven with some carrots and celery and some, you know, flavoring, and I'll take all day to cook that. And I'm going to cook, this is the other thing though, I'm going to pay attention, and I'm going to cook that until it easily pulls with a fork. And as soon as it does, no more. Like, we can overcook in all mediums. It just because you made a pot roast that fell apart doesn't mean it has good flavor. Beef short ribs, I know I just said I make baby backs or spare ribs in a pressure cooker, and that's because it's easy and fast. A beef short rib, it belongs with garlic and red wine, and it belongs slowly braised in the oven. And if you don't, you've sinned against beef. Don't put that in a pressure cooker, please. Don't. The other thing that you can do, and Heather is saying that she uses pressure cookers for quinoa, beans, et cetera. I don't know anything about that, so I will defer to heater. I will defer because I don't really know a lot about that. And I think a lot of people do that, and if that's what you eat, then great. I just don't eat a lot of that stuff. Right. Moving on, though. Another option for a lot of these bigger cuts that are tough that is – phenomenal and so easy to do and so set it and forget it. And unless you get stupid and say like, I want to see what 2 weeks does, cause Guga has done that, and don't, is a sous vide. So if you have a vacuum sealer or a cryovac machine, then all you need to add is a good sous vide circulator. And there's something miraculous about sous vide. And there's a couple different things. One, if you make a pot roast sous vide and you throw fresh herbs inside with it and all, and you let that thing go and you go ahead and you take it up to like 160 so it's well done. It looks more like a conventional pot roast. You cook it long enough. You can look up, you know, cooking times depending on what you're cooking and how big it is to get that tenderness. It's just as tender, but it has a lot more flavor because it's all sealed in. But there's another little magical thing that you can do. You can take cuts of meat that you would never eat, like medium, medium rare, what have you, or even medium well. And you can make them that way. So I would surmise that almost no one here has ever had medium rare brisket. And it's not because you don't eat, like some of you won't eat medium rare. That's a different story. That's up to you. But the reason you probably have never had a medium rare brisket is because if you make brisket medium rare, it's like eating a shoe as far as texture. But you can take a brisket or a piece of a brisket and you can sous vide it, season it, sous vide it. And by the way, I'm not a big soy person, as you guys know, but a little bit of soy sauce goes a long way when you do this. I don't know what it is. It's kind of magical. And you can set your sous vide to, let's say, 137 degrees. And you make this piece of brisket and it tastes like a Kobe steak, like a Kobe beef steak. Especially the point, the part with all the fat in it, it's kind of crazy. So there are other ways to skin that cat, right? Oh, last part here, and I have a couple sous vide circulators I recommend in the show notes for you guys today. I'm going to bring this up. It's the item of the day. It's also a segment today, though, instead of just, hey, you can do business through T-Spaz and help us out. Incubators. So we did talk about glassing, water glassing eggs, but if you want fresh eggs, during the molt, the secret is to have chicks right now, and it will take them about 22 weeks to start laying, and they will lay during the molt because they won't molt because they're babies. They're juveniles. They're just coming into maturity, so they'll skip that first molt. And so usually we bring birds in. They start to lay about 22 to 24 weeks, and then the next season at about 1.5 years of age, they go to a molt. It's 6 weeks. We get very little production. They come back up. Winter comes, it goes back down. If you hatch new birds every year, timed to that molt, you'll have a bridge loan from the chickens, right? Plus, I don't know if you've looked at the price of chicks lately, but it's gotten stupid. Like, especially if you want sexed birds, instead of having to figure out how many, because let me tell you something, when you get straight run, even when you get them from Tractor Supply or Atwoods or a feed store or something, they're buying from a big hatchery. They're buying from McMurray or Cackle or what have you. Well, people pay more money for female birds. So when they say straight run, that's the females left after they culled out enough females to fill their orders for females for people that will pay more money than straight run. That's why you go down the feed store, you get like 12 chickens and you get like 9 roosters. That's why. That's why that happens. So if you don't pay for pullets, then you're going to get a lot of roosters. And if you do pay for pullets right now, I'm finding around $5 a chick. They used to be like $1.50 just a few years ago. So incubators pay for themselves pretty quick as well. Ducks, I checked out Cackle and Metzer today, and sexed female ducks, depending on the breed, are $8 to $14 freaking dollars a chick. That's ordering them in the mail plus paying shipping. Right. And I guarantee most of your shops where you go buy them directly, straight run, same thing. So hatching your own birds makes a lot of sense. And selling extra chicks makes a lot of sense right now to pay for your machine. This one will hatch about 32 eggs. It's on sale for $160. It's the IncuView all-in-one egg, automatic egg incubator. I really recommend you check it out. You can find it at T-Spaz. You can find a link to today's episode. There's a link in today's episode in the video notes below. But somebody already asked when I brought that up today. They said, Jack, you have previously mentioned the Mana Pro incubator. That's actually the one I own right now. It costs about $20 more and it does less eggs. And because of the size and the way it works, it wouldn't really be good for goose eggs. How did that happen? How did I end up with the Mana Pro? So my IncuView I bought when I first came here. So that was 2013. And a couple of years ago, it just stopped working. Now, I used it a lot. But something kind of to, Eddie paid $35 each for 16-week-old pullets. That's another business model before I go on with this. You hatch the birds, you raise them up. So 16 weeks, they're about 6 to 8 weeks from laying at that point. That's how long you would raise a meat bird of an heirloom variety bird versus like a Cornish cross for a meat bird. Like, so if you're tractoring them or something, you know, and you're doing them for meat, you'd raise a Dixie Rainbow or something like that about 16 weeks to get it to harvest size. It would weigh about 5 pound carcass if you did it right. And you'd probably get about $20 if you plucked it and processed it and sold it as food. But somebody like Eddie, who needs birds, who doesn't have them yet and doesn't want to wait as long and doesn't want to, you know, get a brooder and do all that crap, will apparently pay you $35 each for them. We sold off a bunch of our birds for $25 a hen when we went to when we went from chickens to ducks and we got rid of most of our chickens. $25, and we had no problem getting rid of almost 80 of them. And some of them were older. Some of them we actually took less for. Like, this bird's got like one good season in her. We'll give you her for 15. The rest of them are 25. We had people, no, we pay less. Then we'll put them in a freezer. So you can make more money selling layers to people. So you catch your birds, eat your surplus roosters. Here's the other thing. You sell your birds. And you say, if you buy at least 5 hens and you want one, I'll give you a rooster. The roosters that are left when the hens are gone, freezer camp. Right? Make coke of it. And so there's a business model. There's a business model there as well. And I'm telling you, the sweet spot to do this is not the country where everybody does it. And it's not the middle of the city where people can't have chickens. Urban, rural fringe, baby. Places like Dallas-Fort Worth, all these other little cities and all these different places, little bit in the country. Everybody wants chickens right now. Everybody wants ducks right now. You could sell the hell out of them. See, and here Frank's saying, we bought 20 chicks 5 weeks ago. 23 delivered, 16 survived. Egg layers and a few dual purpose. So think about the price that Frank paid if you had 20 chicks, 23 showed up. So they gave some extra ones. A lot of places do that. But only 16, so he actually paid for six. He actually got 16 for what he paid for. Now, how many of them are going to be females? I don't know. It depends on what he bought. If you bought pullets, most of them should be. Occasionally, you buy pullets, and the guy made a mistake when he checked under the hood, right? But most of the time, it's pretty good. And it's just pocket money. You're not going to make a fortune on this. But if you do it right and you market it right, you know, use Nextdoor, use Craigslist, etc. Put together a little website. Explain how you make sure your birds are good birds and what have you. And you should be able to sell, you know, a few dozen every spring. Now you can pay for your feed for your birds for 4 or 5 months. You see how that works? This is how you do this. Anyway, the Mana Pro incubator, I took the IncuView, and I only hatch like once or twice a year. And if I have bantams going broody like I do right now, I don't even hatch. Right now I have 3 bantam hens and a Muscovy who teamed up with one of the bantam hens. Unfortunately, the Muscovy didn't show up until about a week into incubation, so I don't want to give them more eggs now because they're out of time, right? I want eggs that are going to hatch within a couple days of each other per batch. But I got 3 bantam hens. Each have 8 duck's eggs under them. So, you know, they're going to come out. And mama, I don't know if you've ever done this before. You have a bantam chicken hatch baby ducks. Once the babies start to kind of follow her around, she kind of looks at them every once in a while out of the side of the eye like, What's up with you, man? And then they just kind of like, you almost see them like shrug their wings, like, guess my kids are freaks, and they do a good job of raising them. So we might not even use our incubator this year. And with things like that, I would say to somebody that wanted to hatch eggs, if you pay shipping and ship it back, I'll ship you my incubator. That incubator probably made a good 20 trips across the country in the mail. I think I sent it to Nick Ferguson. It went to Ferguson and back like 3 times. And it finally crapped out. So when I needed a new incubator, I'm like, I already know this is a good one. Let me try something else. So I got the Mana Pro. It was $180, and it does something like 24 eggs versus 32. And it was $180, and the normal price on the IncuView is like $225. So it costs less, and I didn't need to hatch 32 eggs. And I thought, for my audience, I'll try something different and see how it is. And this is what I would tell you. The IncuView is a little more complicated to program. The Mana Pro is stupid easy to program based on, you know, 27 days for ducks, 21 days for chickens, etc. Like, really easy. The IncuView works just as good. It's just a little less intuitive to program. The IncuView, you have to take the lid off to add water to it, which disrupts your humidity, though it did not affect hatching rate at all. And then you have two different channels for water, and for the first part of the hatch, you fill one, and the second, you keep both full. The Mana Pro sort of works the same way, but it has a little thing that sticks out the side and has a little red thing, like a little stopper that goes in one side, like side A and B. So you add water to side A from the outside with it closed up. You never have to open it. And then when you get to lockdown, you open, you pull the little red tab out of the other side so you don't get confused. You fill them both up. It's just a little fiddly, and it's easy to spill water wherever it's sitting because you're pouring it in this little tiny slot that sticks out. So it's a little fiddly, but it's no big deal. And I just put a dish towel under it. And if I overfilled it, okay, oh, well, it went on a dish towel. So that's the big difference between them. Less eggs, easier to program, a little fiddly with the water, but you don't have to open it. You have to open it, a little more complicated to program, does more eggs. And I think it probably circulates air a little bit better. But both of them had damn near 100% hatch rate. So I recommend them both. But I realized I never actually wrote up the Mana Pro. I'll try to do that this weekend. I'm also going to be writing up my new urban worm farm, which I am freaking so fantastically happy with. And thank you so much, Peyton, for the $5 super chat. I really appreciate the value for value exchange there. Thank you so much. I have a couple of things, Star, just two things. I'm going to hit those real quick before we wrap up. Jesse said, the risk of being debanked for wrong think is a big deal breaker for me. Yeah, that's when we were talking earlier about the banking thing. And Kevin O'Leary saying we don't need regional banks. How easy is it to debank people for wrong think, wrong thought, wrong action if you have five or six banks in the whole country? It's really easy. They people need a bank account to function, and they're going to have a bank account in one of four, five, six banks. But don't worry. Kevin O'Leary says you can still buy stock in them. Yeah. Yeah, really, really nice. Self-custody Bitcoin. Guys, look, I know some of you are just anti-Bitcoin. It's going to go to zero. Whatever. How long does Bitcoin have to do what it's doing and what it's always done before you admit you are wrong? Please don't be the person who built his house on stupid, and rather than admitting the stupid decision, will burn the house down and burn to death inside it because you can't admit you were wrong. I'm not saying to put your life savings. I'm saying have something. Learn how it works, self-custody, learn to use a Lightning Network, get involved with Value for Value, get on Nostr. Guys, I've stacked 150,000 sats on Nostr this week. I got on Nostr Monday morning. When I was supposed to, that's why the show went late Monday, because while I was supposed to be putting together some of the last stuff for the show, I was dicking around trying to figure out how to make Nostr work. And so I went live on Nostr like 9 o'clock in the morning on Monday, and I emptied my Albi wallet out. I left like 1,000 sats in it, so I had something to throw back at people. And I checked it this morning, I have 154,000 sats. Not a bad 3/4 of a week for posting shit on social media. And this is the parallel economy. Everything that we talk about, we say parallel economy, and I see it like all over social media all the time. We need a parallel economy. This is the parallel economy. This is how you do business with each other. You want to create local economies? Use Lightning. Wallet of Satoshi. You know, get some Bitcoin, however you do it. If it's not in Lightning when you get it, there's ways to get it in there. You can use Wallet of Satoshi exclusively. It's not self-custody, but if you use something like Exodus, they have Lightning. You can do one transaction and move on-chain to Lightning, which is just faster, lighter, not really traceable transactions, and keep your cash money in Lightning. Get yourself a hardware wallet and self-custody your on-chain Bitcoin and start doing business in it. If you own a business and receive payments from the public, and you don't take Bitcoin as a payment method, I don't even know what to say. Like, if you watched the first half of this podcast today, and you were like, this is fire, this dude's spitting the truth, and then you're like, I ain't going to use Bitcoin, you might not make it. You might not make it. Like I said, silver and gold, check. Real estate, check. Business of your own, check. Other investments, check. Tools, you know, gardens, all of it. But geez. Guys, I'm sorry to put it on you this hard. Most of the people that tell me Bitcoin's going to zero, I prefer fill in the blank. They don't own any fill in the blank either. It's just an excuse. or it's technically hard and they're afraid they'll do something wrong. Please take to heart the episode we did yesterday. It was a great discussion. Just try shit. Get $50 worth. You're probably going to blow $50 this weekend on something that you don't really need. Take that $50, learn, use it as tuition. Call it Bitcoin self-education tuition, and by the time you're done with it, you probably end up with $48. It's probably going to actually cost you $2. Get it at least on your phone in a good software wallet like Coinami or Exodus or something like that, and throw $5 into Lightning and move it to Blue Wallet or Wallet of Satoshi. Learn how to go from Wallet of Satoshi back on chain. Learn how to do the stuff. Or when it all comes crashing down, don't tell me you wish you knew. Sorry. Bonnie says, statement, one needs enough in reserves to pay real estate property taxes for more than 1 year. A person will lose property, own nothing, per the WEF. That's a good point. So when I say you need a reserve fund to pay your bills, and I say mortgage, I'm not talking principal and interest alone, especially those of you who are blessed enough to have completely paid off your property. If that's you, then you need to take the fact that you need to keep insurance on your property and you need to be able to pay your taxes on your property seriously. And if you're doing that, no problem out of income, but you have no reserve, remember, the minute that income is cut, there's a time clock that starts before your property's on the auction block. And some parasite like me, who doesn't know you and is not doing it to be a parasite, but you'll feel like I am, who has a nice cash reserve, if that starts to happen in mass because of this shit, I'll be out there going, 25 grand. Yeah, I'll buy a house for 25 grand. No problem. Cash money, no problem. That's what's going to – this is going to hurt. I only spend so much time. If you watch the beginning of this or listen to the beginning of this and you're like, dude, this guy is amped. It's not an act. I'm not an actor. I wasn't even in drama club in high school. Shocking, I know. I had a mullet in high school, and I hung out with all the people who got stoned all the time. Okay? I was a stoner that played sports, right? And so I'm not an actor. I'm not good at it. I can only be that passionate when I care about something. Art by Lee Murphy says, what's your current favorite hardware wallet? Trezor. The Trezor Model T, right? That's my favorite hardware because it pairs with Exodus. Not necessarily how I use it anymore, but I recommend Exodus because they have great support and I can't be your technical support. If you go to thebitcoinbreakout.com/tools, thebitcoinbreakout.com/tools, or just thebitcoinbreakout.com and click on tools, you'll see all the stuff I recommend. There are some things I need to add to that page, and another thing to do this weekend. Another thing to do this weekend is Start 9 just added where you can like basically run your own version of, I exactly understand what it is yet, but basically you have complete control of your Noster stuff and connecting to Iris and then therefore Noster through Tor, and it's just an app you can add to your embassy server. So I have another technical thing to learn. Guys, remember when I talk and you think, man, this guy just knows all this stuff. I don't know all this stuff. I'm having to figure out stuff every day. Yeah, Eddie says, for those who may still have a Jax wallet, it's going away. Yes, it is. Please get off the Jax wallet. Please get off the Jax wallet. I used to recommend Jax, but I haven't recommended Jax for like 4 years. And I've said get off Jax for 4 years. So I can only say, you know, that so much. Kevin says the Trezor was pretty effortless to learn. One more and I got to go, guys. We're at almost 2 hours. There's something you need to know about the Trezor, especially when it comes to pairing it with Exodus. When you get a Trezor wallet, it has no firmware on it. It's basically an open vessel. Hunter, where you been, bro? What happened to Jax is they stopped doing any development support and upgrades to it almost 5 years ago. So I said, get off of Jax. Anyway, that's it. And the reason it does that is so that, and you need to buy this directly from Trezor. Do not buy this from Joe on freaking eBay or even off Amazon. I have a link on my Bitcoin Tools page. Yes, I make a small commission. By the way, they pay me in Bitcoin. Isn't that interesting? It ships directly from Trezor. It has no firmware on it. And the first time you plug it in, it'll pop up and say it wants to talk to the Trezor mothership and install the firmware. You need to do that before you can pair it with Exodus, or you'll sit there angry at it trying to get it to pair, and you'll think, I don't want to connect to the Exodus, the Trezor mothership, because I want to manage it with Exodus. It doesn't matter. You have to connect first. It's pretty painless. It walks you through it. You do that, then it pairs beautifully with Exodus. Then you can open your Exodus wallet and say, I want to receive. It'll give you an address. You can receive to an address that will be managed by your hardware wallet, but you can see it in your software wallet. You just can't send it till you plug your hardware wallet in and enter your PIN code on your hardware wallet. That's what makes it extra secure. Now think about that real quick as I wrap up. Think about that compared to going down to the bank and trying to get your money out. You know how stupid that is? I don't actually believe people really went to the bank to try to get their money out. I think the people behind the banking scam had people go there and pretend they wanted their money out, because who the hell does that to get, you know how I get money out of my bank today? Transfer funds. And one real quick thing as I wrap up, let's bookend this going back to where we started. Kevin, the scumbag, P.O.S. O'Leary, you lying twat. People, small depositors are moving out of these regional banks and they're pouring into the big banks. No, they're not. You snot-slinging little twat. That guy, I've never liked him, by the way. When I watch Shark Tank, I'm like, the way he talks to some of those people, he's like, you're a pig. Like, he literally calls. I'm like, I thought about going on there and saying I wanted money for TSP and lying just to get on the show so he could call me a pig and I could grab him by his nose holes with my two fingers and drag him across that desk and crack him one in the mouth before security got to me, because I'm pretty sure I could pull it off. But just a disrespectful POS and a liar. Let me tell you why I know that all these, you know, small depositors are not running to JP Morgan Chase from Regional Bank XYZ. Have you opened a bank account recently? Now, if you already have an account with a bank and you want to add an account, you can do that online in seconds. You have to go, you have to sign paperwork, you have to provide ID, social security number, freaking references. It's so much because of the anti-money laundering and all the other crap. To open a new bank account with a big bank, it's an effort. It's like going to the dentist. It's not like anybody can do it, but it's no fun. Okay? Right? You follow me? Okay. So since Monday, millions of people just like you have moved their money. Who here moved their money to JP? One person tell me. He's still got 200 people watching. Right? Lost a bunch of people when we left the gloom and doom and the brimstone, right? We still got 198 people watching. One person, you moved your money to a big bank from a small bank this week. Tell me who you are. I'll wait. It's not coming. It's a lie. Now, you know who moved money? People that already had bank accounts in the big banks. So the guy that's making payroll and stuff like that, right? He's a small business. But when I say small business, I'm talking like $5 million business. So Eddie has a friend who moved to Chase. 200 people. We got a guy that knows a guy. This is the mass crisis, the mass exodus. One guy out of 200 knows a guy, right? And Hunter says he moved money. What'd you move money for, Hunter? Where'd you move it to? What are you doing? Haven't been inside a bank for years. Well, you move money, you must have had another bank account if you didn't open an account, right? Yeah? This is what happened. The people that have like a small business, couple million bucks, $5 million turnover, et cetera, they have a bank account with the big bank and they have a bank account with a small bank. They didn't go down and knock on the door and look in the window, right? Oh, let me in. Come on, Jimmy, I need to move my money. No, they just went and they did a wire transfer. And if you did that, you're part of the sucker's hook. Remember what I told you. The bank, FDIC is your insurance. You're the bank's insurance.
depositors are the bank's insurance policy. The more of you of a bank has, the more deposits they have every week from your payroll, the more insurance they have, the more money they can play with on the other side of the balance sheet. This is not, oh, that's interesting. Oh, I got to take Hunter back off. Hunter went the other way. Hunter went from the big bank to the regional bank. But according to Kevin O'Leary and Fox News, there's this mass exodus from regional banks because we don't need them anymore. So we got a guy that knows the guy and a guy that went the opposite direction. Canceling the first guy, we're at a zero, right? Frank says, two of my accounts are attached to Fold so I can move money. That's cool. Yeah, use the Fold card, stack sats. That's my last thing for you Bitcoin people, or anti-Bitcoin people. There's so many ways right now. You know, you're not going to become a mogul or nothing. But you could be stacking a couple hundred sats or more a month doing what you already do. You know, 1 year and you're a multi-sats millionaire. Someday, not too long from now, that's going to matter. Anyway, guys, remember, you want to support the show, lots of ways to do that. tspaz.com. Incubator's on the item of the day today, but you can buy your stuff online through there. Become a member. Support me on Fountain. Zap me on Noster. Whatever it is, I really would appreciate your support. It's how I do what I do and deliver the type of content that you got today. Tomorrow, expert counsel Q&A. Probably two new expert counsel members you've never heard before, because if you're not growing, you're dying. With that, I'll catch you tomorrow with another episode. Are they gonna bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd. You don't have to live the way they tell you to. Make your own way, the others will follow. Revolution.